Just a couple more examples to get it really clear what he means by spirit and what he means by sex. Same pattern. What we're going to see is in the dream, she sees me in a certain way, and then that the way she sees me will appear symbolized in a later dream as something available to her. So the spirit would be the, or another way to put this would be, you know, Jung makes the distinction, I don't know if he had made it yet, between an instinct and an image, or an instinct and an archetype, that the instinct has an image within it. The instinct would be the sexuality, the image would be the spirit.
And that's where he and Freud kind of split.
Right, right, yeah,
okay.
Absolutely. This was a thing we did on transference. It was a very strong situation. And what Freud would have said was, well, she was replaying her unfulfilled childhood needs on daddy, looking at it from the past. And what the way we worked was, no, this attraction is often to be understood as pointing to the future. So it's the way that I am seeing, the way we see the other person, that actually tells us about ourselves. So the instinct pulls us to that person, and the image fashions a perception of that person, but that perception is a component of my own psyche.
And we could say that would be true of if it were a hate?
I think any strong attraction.
Okay.
Lust, basically lust or hate, love or hate.
So the image within it is probably, in most cases, simply the other person.
Well,
the person attracted to it.
Yeah, that we actually see an image in ourselves outside of ourselves, in the other person.
Right, you made the statement that instinct has an image within it. So say her instinct of sexuality, lust, passion, would be you. She's projecting, you are the image of this instinct.
Right. But the image is in her, but she first sees that image outside in me.
Right.
Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And then what she does is she withdraws the image and sees it as part of herself.
Okay. And that's what you're going to show us.
Yeah, that's what we saw in the first dream. That first,
yes, right.
I'm the owl, then she finds the owl. And here's another one. Brought two more. A luminous disc is floating in the air a short distance from the earth. Somehow, without being conscious of it moving toward me or me toward it, I am very near it, close enough to touch. His form is actually a shell, the birth of Venus. Botticelli's painting. Probably you all know this one. Probably.
I just saw it a few months ago.
Oh, did you really?
And yeah, just
is it New Uffizi? Everyone know that? Okay. It's one of my favorite paintings. It's marvelous. The shell opens, and I see myself contained inside. I am lying down next to a man whom I sense is Gary. We are snuggled together as if we are awakening from sleep or settling into it. There is a strong feeling of felinity in me, in both of us. I feel like a cat in a gentle space. The shell continuing to float exists in two elements, sea and sky simultaneously. And then a year later, she dreams the following. The oyster shell is a magnificent blue-gray, like the eye of a peacock's tail. Remember the peacock's tail? See how that stuff shows up in the weirdest places. I lie inside, very tiny and naked, feeling very free of my fears. The shell is floating in the sky ocean, a deep, dark blue, and from the depths of this blue, a golden light streaks into the shell. I feel it encircle me, outlining the shape of my body. So, first it was me comforting her, now it's her own light comforting her. So that was first, that light was first experienced in me, now she finds it in herself. That's probably enough to give you an idea. What, how the psyche uses instinct teleologically. That makes sense, everybody. But we better get clear what we mean by spirit.
I would have to say that I agree with what Kathy said initially, that there is such a thing as a spirit sexual experience that is not projection.
I can imagine. I can imagine. But he's certainly not in that place yet.
Exactly. So he's, some of this, when he starts talking about this earthly sexuality versus celestial spirituality, seems to me to be talking about where he is.
But it happens in any deep psychological work, too. I think you You may have a satisfying sexual spiritual relationship, but it doesn't mean the psyche won't come back later and hit you with another attraction that you have to work with symbolically.
Definitely.
And that's what he's painting the way for, I think.
I just couldn't make it as cut and dried as that, I would say.
So was the meaning of the image of the you and the owl, and for her, was that her self?
That was the self at work.
What was it? The meaning was finding her own self.
Step by step. So that the owl was part of the self, the light was part of the self, and you know, if we had time, we could go through it. We've already done it once, so I just didn't want to touch the surface for you. What happens is there is a meaningful sequence behind these attractions, and slowly new parts of her deeper self are coming to her by way of this erotic attraction.
So it's a shame we don't know more about Toni Wolff and who she was, because obviously then the self was using his attraction to her
yes.
to teach him something yeah. about himself, but we don't know that much about her.
Yeah.
So we can't...
I don't know.
Yeah.
Other than... his creativity. Was
she must have been enormously creative.
I don't think she was.
Well, but then how did...
Because he was projecting his creativity onto her.
But shouldn't there be an element of truth in the projection so that they people become bound?
I think there was.
Wasn't she really creative as far as helping him go into active imagination?
Yes, but you see,
the
as a meet as a what's the word?
Mediatrix.
She was a medium.
She was a medium for him.
Wasn't it also her affinity for alchemy?
That's where they split.
Oh, was it just the opposite thing?
Just the opposite. She said no.
She couldn't go there.
Because
Emma said at the end of her life, that Toni helped him, that she would not have been able to be in that whole realm of active imagination. So I think she must have been terribly creative. You know, she didn't write a lot.
Yeah.
She wrote the one book. But she must have been really creative as an analyst. They said she was very effective.
I don't know, Jane. I can't disagree with you. What I have understood is that she had a vivid imagination, and I don't think Emma did. The Swiss, as a rule, are plotters.
With a D?
Plodders, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, they are sensate feeling types. And that imaginative side is not an intrinsic part of the Swiss character. Now, they're appreciative of it, which is why all these, Rilke lived there and Wagner lived there. They're supportive of it, but they themselves aren't imaginative on the whole.
Was Toni Collette?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well,
I thought she was.
Well, she lived in Zurich. I'm sure her family was Zurich.
Yeah. Okay.
I think they were even like old blue blood Zurich.
Old Bernese, I think.
Maybe.
Family.
Maybe. Okay.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah. Well, it's going to get worse. Spirituality conceives and embraces. It is womanlike, and therefore we call it, I think it's Mater Celestis, the celestial mother. I think today we would say it is feminine. I don't think we can substantiate what he says, woman and man, anymore. But we can say what he's seeing is the masculine and feminine. Now what he's doing, he's breaking up the process of growth into two parts. There's instinct and there's meaning. Or if you think of Eliot, we had the experience, but we missed the meaning. Experience and meaning. And what we try to do in our work is take what looks like objective happenings in reality, whether that be desirousness or hatred or calamity, and ask, is this experience here to teach us something? And if it is, what is taught is a new understanding of ourselves, or you might say, a new image of ourselves. So that the material world can communicate an image. Now, which came first, the chicken or the egg? I think what you could see in this, hopefully in these couple of dreams I mentioned, is how the image creates the experience.
So in his descriptions, is this the description from the perspective of a man's psyche when he talks about spirituality as womanlike?
I don't think so. Cross out womanlike and put in feminine.
Yeah, even so.
I think it fits. In other words, the image conceives of the experience, and the instinct lives it out. That's how I understand that paragraph. The feminine is the aspect of the mind that generates growth by the production of an image. It creates the pregnancy. It carries the pregnancy. It carries the possibility of the experience.
See that again? It's the aspect of the mind
that
the feminine. Start the sentence again.
Feminine is the part of the mind that carries the image, or generates the image, or receives the image.
He said engenders.
Engenders the image. Yeah. See, he's breaking up this growth process into image and experience, meaning experience.
So that's the pregnancy, is the spirit holding or containing.
Yeah, it's when there's a new step to be created in our lives. That step is preceded by the psyche creating an image. And something in us holds that image. This is all in the unconscious. Or you might say it's as if something in us holds that possibility. And that holding is as if a maternal feminine process.
I can go along with that imagery.
Well, I've convinced you. Good.
I've painted them all.
Oh, well, there. You can't argue.
I say that.
Now, I think if you can abstract this from man and woman and see that in growth, when you are following the meaning of the physical world and your desires or resentments of it, that what we are living out bodily is first appears as a possibility, and that is as if our life becomes pregnant with that possibility. And then in living it out, we give birth to it. And then that's the phallus.
Yeah, I was curious about how the imagery presents itself to the sexes, to the men versus women, you know, just as we have the animus and the animal.
I don't think there's any difference, but I am not convinced. I mean, I can't say for sure, but I think it's the same.
You say the phallus is what is given birth to?
Yeah, then the thing is lived out in the world. Remember, we're speaking metaphorically here.
I guess what I kind of went with it is that masculine part, yes, takes it out into life.
Yeah.
But it gives it the meaning of it.
It makes the meaning real.
So the eros then and logos work together.
Work together.
Okay.
Yeah. And so he says the sexuality of man, I would say the sexuality of the masculine is more earthly.
Well, he does say man-like. So.
Yeah, but I'm changing it. Because I think that what he's doing, he's seeing this in men and women, and now we realize it's not about men and women, but masculine and feminine. So the sexuality of the masculine is more earthly, that of the woman is more spiritual. So that in the process of coming to consciousness, the image is the receiving the image is the feminine aspect of the process. Living that image out in reality is the masculine aspect of that process. That's how I understand it. I just can't buy his what he says about men and women. It just doesn't fit anymore.
I think he probably would change that. But
yeah.
I got confused then when he started talking about moving towards the smaller and the greater.
Yeah,
and
me
I
too.
Hoped that you would be able to
I hope I can too.
Explain that. Because it was making me angry.
Be careful.
Think of it as like they talk about it in the I Ching, maybe.
Be careful.
Okay.
First of all, we have to ask, do we agree? Second of all, we have to ask, on what level is he speaking? I think he contradicts himself.
Well, he's got two totally contradictory sentences here. The sexuality of man is more earthly. Just right below it, he says the spirit. Oh, it's spirituality. I'm sorry. Spirituality.
Yeah, those are hard sentences. I'll tell you how I try to make sense of them. The spirituality of the feminine is more earthly. It moves toward the smaller. The only way I can make sense out of that is to say if it is concretized, it leads toward the smaller.
Meaning we don't get the meaning out of it.
You have the experience but not the meaning.
Okay.
Or we could think of it as speaking the way the I Ching does, the smaller being the particular.
Okay.
Say more about that.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm not sure I understand.
Well, when they speak about the changes, they speak about the greater and the smaller, and the smaller being the manifestation of something, the particularizing, you might say, of something.
Incarnating it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Could be.
That's kind of where I'm, because I think that when you talk about the, in general, the feminine, loving, loving is more towards a particular person rather than an ideal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that also works, Jane.
But, you know, he says the sexuality of man is more earthly and that of woman is more spiritual. In a general way, you do kind of see that in people. I can see why he might say it as a generality.
Yeah, but still I think then those physical beings are acting out a masculine and feminine principle.
Yeah, you know, women are forced to concentrate on the earthly just by their functions that their bodies have to endure, for example.
Yeah. But then you got a creative man, and I think he's got the same psychology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just in a general way, not.
So if we want to go with what Jane was saying, the spirituality of woman is more earthly, it moves toward the smaller. That would mean that this whole point of getting an image is to make it real. Take your pick. Mendacious, which I had to look up again. I guess it means fraudulent. And devilish is the spirituality of man, and it moves toward the smaller. I'm not quite sure why he brings in mendacious and devilish, other than it's very possible, one sees this a lot, to have an understanding of a dream and then take it on the wrong level.
When I read this, I thought of the little saying, think globally, act locally, where you have an ideal, but an ideal or an image of something that you believe is good for the world, but you act locally in your own life, where the opposite of that would be to have something that you believe in for your own life and to try and force everybody in the world into it, which would be just wrong and devilish.
That works.
It's hard to think that there's no spirituality inherent in the masculine, that isn't lying and devilish. Well, mendacious and devilish is the spirituality of man. Mendacious means lying, right?
Yeah, lying and fraudulent.
Fraudulent. Mm-hmm. Spirituality of man. It moves to the smaller. Now, where that occurs in the spirituality of man, of the masculine, it would lead to the smaller. But isn't there some inherent spirituality that's masculine that is a little bigger than that?
Yeah.
The opposite of that?
Sure, of course. Yeah. Remember, this is the unconscious, just blurting it out.
Okay.
And what I would take it to mean, it's trying to point up that there are two phases to the process of becoming conscious with different effects and dangers.
Okay, so maybe it's then when it's concretizing or doing.
Yes.
Okay.
So the devilish aspect is a particular phase or aspect of
spiritual
process?
Or using it for power, misunderstanding it, using it the wrong way, doing the right thing the wrong way. I think one of the dangers of our work is it gives people power, and then they use it for their own selfish ends. But it just makes them better narcissists. Where, in fact, what the insight is, what ego strengthening is for, to give you enough strength to deal with the self. People get strong and they take off.
I hate to bring up the example, but the people that you encountered when you were last
in your sister letter. Exactly. Power, just pure power. Mm-hmm. I got a letter, from an email from Ava Verenschlag, and talked as if nothing had happened.
Is that the Swiss way?
No. If anything, the Swiss are really kind of much more attentive to the shadow. I don't get too bogged down. I think if you can realize he's dealing with this business of the purposiveness of the instinct, which is separating him out from Freud, mm-hmm. that will help. And to realize he's just beginning to clarify this point, which, as far as I know, no one has ever said before, that instincts have meanings and purposes. And the purpose he's calling feminine, and the instinct he's calling masculine. Now, the next sentence is true, I think, just flat out. Man and women become devils to each other if they do not separate their spiritual ways, for the essence of creation is differentiation. If you are expecting your spouse to be the image that your psyche is generating for you, there's generally hell to pay. That would be not separating the spiritual ways. Sexuality of man goes toward the earthly, the sexuality of woman goes toward the spiritual, kind of what we said. They become devils to each other if they don't distinguish their sexuality. That sexual drive can be shaped as much by the demands of our growth as it can be for the love of the partner. And if you're not aware of that, there's also hell to pay. I see a fair amount of people who come in and say, "I love my spouse, but I'm obsessed with this other person." Well, it's not about the relationship. It's about the psyche using that attraction to bring them somewhere. If they can't get that straight, marriages dissolve over this sort of thing. And it's very hard to deal with. Man shall know the smaller the woman, the greater. Again, I would rephrase that. The masculine makes the thing particular. The feminine is what receives the possibility. Now, why are we bothering with this? See if I can get to this next part. Man shall differentiate himself, see where I am, from spirituality and sexuality. Meaning that I have to pay attention to my eroticism and ask myself, what is it doing for me, and not simply go with it blindly. That's where I understand the meaning differentiate.
So hold the tension on it?
Yeah. Own the experience and then say, is this here to be lived or is it here to teach me something?
And sometimes it's both.
And sometimes it's both.
Do we get to choose?
No, but it sounds nice to talk about it.
Get back to the blood and the wine experience.
I just happen to bring it. Sometimes one is allowed by the gods to substitute wine for blood, but that will come later. Vision Seminar, page 243. I'll read it again. I think it's a marvelous quote. Sometimes one is allowed by the gods to substitute wine for blood. That will come later. In other words, when you have an attraction, or a resentment. Sometimes you're able to work it out ahead of time in active imagination, and sometimes you have to live the thing out. That would be the blood with a painful result, but a lesson that needs to be learned.
But, you know, you aren't asked to do something. You're plunged into something or not.
Yeah.
I mean, yourself isn't going to sit there. Like, Jung wasn't asked to. And he got to decide whether or not to do this relationship with Tunnel. He was just plunged into it. None labor extracted the meaning, but.
Seized. Definitely. Most definitely. Now, we got the basic idea. But here, I think, is the reason we're going into it. For the mother and the phallus are superhuman daimons. See where I am?
No.
The paragraph beginning, man shall differentiate, go down 4 lines down. For the mother and the phallus are superhuman daimons that reveal the world of the gods. That, I think, is what we are. In other words, this business I talked about, and he has talked about, of making the potential real, that the divinity, the Abraxas is the complexity of our own psyche that is asking us to take that potential bit by bit and make it real. The way that works often is through erotic attraction. That is the world of the gods made real. That's how he goes from Abraxas to sex. And we're going to see pretty soon, he goes from Abraxas to sex to community. Because community, then, is what is formed when you're living out your genuine potential. You look like you're going to have a stroke, Sandy.
Yeah, me. I don't know.
You okay?
That's what I'm just writing about in that paper, but this goes so much deeper than the paper because of the people I'm dealing with that I'm going to read for. But because mother and phallus is in that situation.
Yeah.
And then knowing yourself is maybe the real part of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I'd love to hear you talk about the mother and the phallus that I'm reading.
Yeah. I don't want it to be a fly on the wall. We should just bring up Dionysus.
Bring a statue of Priapus. Then I'm all talking.
They for sure would not ask me back.
Or. You've seen those statues of Pan in Greece.
Yeah.
Pan's about this big, and he's got this huge phallus.
Right.
This big.
Right. He and the satyrs are always naked.
Yeah.
Chasing the meat.
Yeah. They know what they're doing. Okay, so I wanted to make sure you got multiplicity to reality in the last sermon, and now the way that is often lived is that potential is revealed through instinct. Through the experience that instinct leads you into. Okay, they affect us more than the gods, since they are closely akin to our own essence. In other words, the way we know what's divine is to pay attention to the meaning of our desire. The meaning of our desire is close to us, but the idea of potential is abstract. If you do not differentiate yourself from sexuality and from spirituality, you do not regard them as an essence, both above and beyond you, you are delivered over to them as qualities of the Pleroma. If you don't work with this process, the process will take you over. And you'll live it out in just the wrong way.
Too bad people in their late teens, early 20s couldn't get a course in this.
Well, they wouldn't listen anyway. No, I think, you know, this is my own personal bias. I say, for God's sake, go after it when you're that age. And when you get sick of it, then you can start talking about what it means. That's what I do like about the Swiss. They are not prudish about this. I mean, they do. Sex is just one aspect of life. For us, it's like, it's ridiculous. Spirituality and sexuality are not your qualities, they're the self's. Not things you possess and accomplish. In other words, they seize you. They possess and accomplish you since they are powerful diamonds. Skip a couple lines. No man has a spirituality unto himself, or sexuality unto himself, instead he stands under the law of spirituality and of sexuality. Kind of what you were saying, Jane, that they seize you. The instinct seizes you to convey a meaning, and it's not up to you how that happens. The only thing you can do is deal with it. Deal with it. You may find yourself attracted to people you don't even like, but there's a meaning in it.
Yeah. Saying about the, it was about the all the suffering you have to go through for love because I didn't know how it went.
Well, it's part of the bargain.
Yeah.
No man should be ashamed.
Mm-hmm. But paying his due to, we all have to pay our part.
We all have to pay our tribute.
Yes.
We all have to pay our tribute. Shouldn't feel ashamed. We all have to pay our tribute. That is so true.
To love.
Yeah.
He might have said eros.
I don't remember, Jane.
It's a different level than when you're acting or just loving.
But it's love with the body. That's, I think, what he's driving at. Of course, he's thinking of himself. He had to go through that experience. I know we wouldn't have Jungian psychology without Tony Wolf. That's just clear as anything.
One of the things, though, that Jung did that's so difficult, I think, for a lot of us when we're seized by these things, is he continued to engage his ego in differentiating out, even though he did pay his due by going into the experience. He didn't go into it blindly.
No.
So it didn't really own him.
Right. That's what he's driving at. That's his differentiating himself from it.
And there we can probably thank Emma, because she was keeping him on his toes and making him think about what the hell he's doing and making all this conscious. So between the two of them, Jungian psychology was born, probably.
I agree, Carl. I think I told you my woman I worked with was the editor of the Cartoon Works in German with Jung's daughter-in-law, so she knew the family quite well, so they worked in the home with Seestrasse, and she said all those kids took after Emma. She was stronger than him. She must have been
very grounded.
Very grounded, and fiercely loyal to herself and to her values.
Well, part of that was her sense of her social status too. I mean, she was part of
could be
society that he hadn't wasn't really part of.
But I think in an argument, she held her own, and yeah, he could be a tornado. I think if he wanted to.
Sure.
They sure didn't portray her like that in that movie, In Dangerous Method.
Oh, didn't they?
Portrayed her as very, you know, kind of feminine, you know, very physically. Yeah, I didn't picture her like that at all.
Amazing. I've talked a lot of young, a thing that bugs me, I've talked to a lot of young people who have seen that movie and it's turned them off of you. Mm-hmm. And I have them say, look, go watch this movie. That is not history. But they don't distinguish.
That's part of our whole modern scientist thing, or whatever, is you can get so much information, but
right.
You have to be able to think through the information and really make judgments about it. Because anybody, any 6-year-old that can type can post something on the internet. Mm-hmm. But that's true. I mean, we have people come into the hospital and they haven't listened to anything any doctors told them because they read something on the internet and now they've damn near killed themselves. What happened?
So when you say to them, go see this movie, what movie are you
saying? There's a fairly even-handed documentary called My Name Was Sabina Spielrein. Yeah, do you have access to Netflix?
No.
I've got a copy of that. If I can dig it out, I'll loan it to you. It's very well done, I think.
It's very image-based. That film, to me, is a lot of symbols and images.
With the second one.
This is Venus Bill Ryan. Yeah, the second one. You're talking about. Because I have that, too. Okay. You can't find it all.
Well, that other movie you're talking about seems like a real travesty because the book that it takes its title from is much more balanced. I mean, if you read the book, Dangerous Method, Kerr, I think the author is, he gives a very balanced view and suggests that, you know, this all could have been just sort of poetry and you know, as part of the psychic dimension between Spielrein and Jung, it's not. But apparently, that movie.
I didn't see it.
I couldn't even watch it at all.
Goes into some wonderful explorations of the general thinking of the times and what was going on in Augenbauer's labs and all that sort of stuff and all that kind of. You know, where Jung was coming from. It's
mm-hmm. The movie goes into a lot of S&M, right?
Yeah.
That's
because it's, you know. Yeah. It wasn't in the book at all, as I remember.
No, but the movie was, and it was really fun.
This is how making movies is to some movies.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with it. Yeah, nothing.
But you've got to remember the movie.
Yeah. They took the title from that book. I think they should be open to a lawsuit.
And the thing to remember, maybe you got this, I'll just say what hit me. Jung was a young psychiatrist, and it really does apply to what we're talking about here. You know, he was 32 years old, and he reads a book by Sigmund Freud, and he said, hey, this is interesting. I'm going to try this. And he goes to Sabina Spielrein, and he tries it. And she falls in love with him. And he falls in love with her. He doesn't know what the hell's going on. So this whole thing just blew up in his face. And that, I think, needs to be stressed. He did not know what he was doing. But neither did anyone at that time. And then I think that's one of the reasons why he went to Freud, to try to figure out what was going on.
And Freud probably didn't give him much help.
No.
Because you look at Freud's inner circle, had guys like Ferenczi, who was sleeping both with his patient and the patient's mother and trying to decide between the two of them which one he preferred, because he thought he might marry one of them.
I think Freud's kind of stirred the pot there, because he liked to play psychological games with people, from what I've read about some things that he did with Jung and some of the other people in his inner circle. And so I think he just tried to make things worse.
Well, this guy I worked with, Meyer, knew Freud. And, you know, that Wednesday, they call it the Wednesday Society. He was part of that. He was part of the very first group that met around Freud. And he said he went to see Freud to do analysis, and he saw Freud for an hour, and he walked out of the office, and he stepped out on the street, and he froze. He couldn't move. He just stood there, frozen. What is going on? And then he realized, Freud wants to kill me. And then he could move again. And he got out of the group. So he must have been a very destructive guy. He said, oh, he was so sweet when he talked to me. But I realized he was going to try to kill him. So, this
how
was...
What was his motive? What was
I would imagine jealousy.
But if you look at who Sabina Spielrein became, she worked with... She was very involved with Piaget, wasn't
she? Yeah, she was his analyst.
And worked with children in an amazing way, so something good came out of that relationship.
Right.
And you have to consider the time. We can't go back and judge a period of time or judge people by our standards. He should have known better. How could he?
How could he? Well, it's relevant here because, you see, this is what Jung did not understand when he was starting out. That Freud would have, I think Freud must have said to him, well, she's living out parental, unfinished parental love. Classic Freudian understanding of transference in her falling in love with him. And what he is realizing later now is, no, this Eros situation has a purpose. So you can see that I think he is partly dealing with how do we understand these strong feelings, the sexual feelings in the analytic situation, and the way we do is to say, what are they, what's the purpose? So that's really behind this, I think. And that may help you grasp why he distinguishes these two sides, that there's the experience. Freud would just say, well, the experience is the experience. And he's saying, no, wait a minute, the experience has a meaning. And that's what he's trying to work out here. But it wasn't clear yet. And it wasn't until, I think, much later that he really got clear on what this was. When we did that transference seminar thingy, I went through every stupid sentence he ever said about transference, and I arranged them chronologically. And it's not till the very end of his life that we actually hear him talking like this. So this was a long time coming for him. Well, we're out of time. But I think hopefully this adds some flesh and blood to this schematic presentation, and I think it helps to read masculine and feminine where he says man and woman, and to realize there really are two parts to this process, that when we get hit by instincts, there's a way to get to the meaning, and that's what he's trying to figure out at this point.
I feel, to me, based on everything that's been said, he really treated or approached Eros was much more spiritually than what a Freud would have done. He was just trying to explain it away. But he approached it so much more with a spiritual, loving way to find to say, yes, the meaning is the important.
Absolutely, Jane. Well, let's say we got as far as the real. No, where do we stop? Let's see, we'll pick up next time. No man has a spirituality unto himself. We'll pick up there. I had you read to 354. I don't think we'll get past that, but let me see what would be a nice stopping point.
This is 14.
Where is 14?
On 356.
Yeah, but I don't think we'll get there, but just in case. Read to 14, 356. And we'll bring our food next time. And we'll just see how it goes. How many pages we got left? 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 pages left. We'll probably be finished in a couple of years. So I reckon end of February, to be realistic, say. Now, I won't mention if you wanted to continue and put an idea in my head that I like, but you can think about it. The idea is doing something, going back to Jung, and doing something that shows how he applied these ideas in the Red Book. So you might just think about what you want to do if you want to continue. I'm open. That's just a thought. Okay, thank you, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks.